And I think that you raised some really interesting points. I think that our listeners, there are sources online that you can go to find out what's going on in with Ukraine. It's a big story, and there's a lot of things that we are not being told much about. So I would just recommend that people. A good place to go is Consortium News. There's some good articles there. There's good articles by Ray McGovern, who actually, I think we had him as a guest a few years ago on this show. So there is the information out there. And so I want to thank our listeners for calling in. I want to thank people for their confidence in this show. There's not much, you know, we sort of like a lonely voice. We're not so lonely, but we're sort of a voice that's ignored by the mainstream news. So that's one thing about KBOO, that you find out what the mainstream media is kind of avoiding. So I want to thank people for calling in. Thank you for listeners, and stay tuned to KBOO. It's your radio station.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9:29 a.m.
And you're listening to KBOO FM.
The following program is a rebroadcast. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred. Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Portland.
Thank you for listening to Coast Range Radio. This is a radio program of the Coast Range Association. My name is Andrew. Located in Western Oregon, the Coast Range Association works to build just and sustainable communities that provide for people in the natural world. Our work focuses on the connections between Oregon's forests, communities, and the climate crisis. To hear past episodes and to learn more, visit coastrange.org or send me an email at andrew@coastrange.org. Please download and subscribe to Coast Range Radio on your podcast service of choice. Today we share our conversation about beaver ecology and protection with Stan Petrowski. Hope you're all doing well out there with COVID. Everyone's staying safe and healthy. Coast Range Radio is continuing our at-home series, doing phone interviews with folks up and down Oregon. And today I'm really excited to be speaking with Stanley Petrowski. Stan is the founder and president and director of the South Umpqua Rural Community Partnership, and he's a board member and past president of the Umpqua Watersheds nonprofit and a past board member of the Partnership of Umpqua Watersheds, Douglas County Watershed Council. Stan's has been a resident on his ranch in the Tiller area of the Umpqua National Forest for 25 years. Hey, Stan, thanks for joining us on Coast Range Radio.
My pleasure, sir.
So I'm excited to have you here today to talk about your important work on beavers and some of the great things that are happening currently in 2020 with beaver work in Oregon. So wanted to maybe first ask you, why beavers? Why are y'all focusing so much on their protection? And why are beavers important to Oregon and to our watersheds, salmon, forests?
Beaver history is very interesting. Pre-European contact in here, the Pacific Northwest, warring tribes would manage wildlife in order to affect their opposition. And one thing they would do if they conquered another tribe was reduce the deer population and reduce the beaver population, because those two species were so intrinsically important to a holistic, high-functioning level of ecosystem health. So back in the 1700s, when the French trappers came out, Europe was going through what was known as the Little Ice Age. And beaver pelts, beaver hats, beaver coats were very, very valuable. And so French trappers made their way across the United States, and when they hit the Pacific Northwest, they found a bonanza. And millions upon millions of beaver were trapped out of the system. And there was a company called the Hudson Bay Company that paid good money for beaver pelts. And they were shipping beaver over to Europe. So when the Hudson Bay Company became aware of the prospect of the United States taking the Northwest Territory, namely Washington, Idaho, Montana, Oregon, Northern California, etc., their first action to minimize the benefit for doing that was to eliminate the beaver population. The first coin used in Oregon economy was called the beaver coin. And of course, the state of Oregon is one of the few states in the country that has animal on its flag, namely a golden beaver. So it was a big economic issue for Europeans back in the day. Of course, beaver extraction was very detrimental to the ecosystem here. We call beaver ecosystem engineers. Apart from human beings, they do more to alter habitat than any other species. So here, right around 1900s, beaver were designated an endangered species, not in the formal Endangered Species Act level, but just from an ecological standpoint, people realized, hey, we're losing them. So beaver trapping was forbidden in the state of Oregon. And in fact, the value of beaver could be expressed in a picturesque manner by visualizing the state of Idaho and the state of Oregon parachuting beaver out of airplanes into remote areas. And so there was an effort to restore beaver ecology because of its significance, not just in terms of fisheries, but hydrological processes, all that. And right around 2003, all of a sudden, beaver took on a different status. They were designated predators by the state of Oregon, and they were also fur bearers, depending on where the animal was. If it was on private property, it was considered a predator, could be eliminated without permits or anything like that. On public lands and on private property that allows for trapping, they were considered a fur bearer. So they were considered predators mainly because they're a very intelligent animal, and they had an aptitude for building dams in places that were strategically easy to build. Mainly, they were good at plugging culverts and flooding farm fields.
Yeah.
And highways.
Yeah.
And then when the logging ramped up after World War II, they took on an even more onerous view in the eyes of forest land managers. Roads were being plowed into the whole Pacific Northwest, all over the place, and culverts were being plugged everywhere. And so they wanted to be able to easily eliminate them without, you know, a lot of issues, so they just named them a nuisance predator species. Of course, since then, what we understand is that habitat degradation has been outpacing habitat restoration.
Definitely.
And one of the main reasons for that is that these ecosystem engineers were eliminated out of the system. We began to see salmon species, the coastal coho, steelhead in various places, spring chinook, all these beautiful, very valuable elements of the web of life in the Pacific Northwest here were declining rapidly. And part of the reason for that was the elimination of beaver out of the system.
What are they engineering? What are some specifics there that beavers play? Why are they so important?
Well, maybe I could, if you'll permit, a little subjectivity here.
Yeah.
Back very close to 20 years ago, I got involved in a aquatic habitat restoration project on the ranch here. We managed to get about $385,000 to do in-stream restoration work on the ranch, a couple of other adjacent properties, and of course the national forest. And so we're in the process of looking at this, and they were using a Chinook helicopter to drop large old-growth trees into the stream and into the riparian areas.
Yeah,
and they were building rock weirs and doing all this, and a neighbor of mine and I were sitting there watching this, and we said, you know what, beavers do this for free.
Definitely.
And basically, when Oregon made a law that all woody debris to be taken out of the stream system after the 64 flood, most of the streams became erosion ditches and degraded down to bedrock in a lot of places. Beavers were eliminated, large wood was eliminated, and all of a sudden our stream systems were scouring down to the ocean. And all the alluvial material that salmon need to build their nests, their reds, was gone. So now they're spending billions of dollars to restore aquatic habitat, to get the coastal coho, the spring chinook, all these other threatened and endangered and species of concern back. So we immediately started looking at natural function. We take a holistic approach to restoration work, not just, you know, aquatic or terrestrial, but holistic. And we began to realize that this, you know, what most people were looking at as a nuisance rodent predator was actually a significant contributor to stability and quality and quantity of water in the ecosystems. So we began back then promoting beaver ecology in conjunction with doing, you know, some of the large wood replacement and stuff like that. And mainly that still needed to continue simply because most of the riparian zones had been logged out.
So even if you have a beaver coming in there, it's not going to be able to get that large wood because it's just not present where a beaver's working.
Correct. And because of that, what we see is beaver building dams in a lot of the tributaries, and we watch those dams blow out every winter because there's just not enough nick points in the system for them to anchor to be able to really stabilize, you know, the stream flow. There were millions of beaver in the Pacific Northwest, and we're down to the far smaller fragment of that number today. They retain water, they recharge aquifers. If you get involved in aquatic habitat restoration, you begin to realize that a process called connectivity,
yes,
is very important. And what we mean by that is the winter flow should flood the floodplain. As a result of that, the floodplain becomes saturated with water so that during the summer months, it gradually releases it and maintains good quality water flow into the system. Right now, we have streams that were perennial for millennia, and now they are becoming, you know, intermittent at best and disappearing altogether during the summer months.
I've done a little work with watershed councils. It was more of an urban watershed council, and I would interact with, you know, landowners on a regular basis, and they would, you know, they would be really upset when beavers would plug their culverts or flood their lawn or these types of things. You know, we try to talk it out with them and try to explain how valuable they are for ecosystem services and try to reason with folks. But it was, you know, in an urban system where there's just no space, it was a really difficult challenge. And there was trappers that were hired to hunt and kill these urban beavers. Why are folks hunting and killing them on federal lands or in like places where they're not necessarily interacting with infrastructure as regularly, or is that happening?
Two things. One, even the whole idea, primarily because of the designation of the species as a predator and a nuisance. So there's a whole paradigm, there's a whole mindset associated with the animal that says beaver bad. But from a pragmatic standpoint, again, we have the issues with, you know, when a beaver looks at a road that is crossing a stream, especially if it's in a low gradient profile, they go, wow, you know, all I have to do is plug this hole and I've got my pond. And of course, the pond and a water supply is their main, I mean, that's what their whole life history is built on as protection. They are a prey-based species. And I mean, bears, lions, eagles, osprey, they all eat beavers. So it's mainly a cultural thing. And because we have solutions to the issues, the infrastructure issues that are associated with beaver moving into an area. And we feel with studies that we've done, it's far less expensive to install, say, a flow control device into the system than it is to keep paying the animal plant health inspection service to come out and pay them $300 to $400 a beaver to trap it out, because invariably more beaver will move in.
Yes.
It's a recurrent problem. So there's a lot of pressure to keep the population reduced. What people don't realize is that in geologic time, beaver have been quintessential in facilitating stability and health in ecosystems. When, you know, what we're seeing today in climate change,
yes,
there have been climate changes historically, and beaver were a key species in acting as a buffer in those changes. Because we've eliminated them for the most part in many places, you know, radically reduced their population, they're not here to mitigate, let's say, what climate change is going to do. So not only do they play a significant role in the complexity and diversity of ecosystems, but they mitigate change in weather and in climate. We know for a fact, it's well documented, peer-reviewed papers, in systems that have beaver, the coho, Oregon coastal coho population thrives. And it makes sense. They co-evolved. They've been a component of the system forever. When Europeans came to the Pacific Northwest and saw these salmon runs, of course, they were typical of Western mindset. We look at things singularly instead of holistically. And they didn't see the connection between the fish and the beaver. Now we're paying the price.
So y'all are working on a project or an initiative right now. What is that effort that you're doing to try to protect these beavers?
Well, we just made a proposal to the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission to prevent trapping, commercial and hobby trapping and hunting of beaver on federal lands. Not the whole state, just the federal lands, in areas where they're less likely to cause conflict, you know, in their interactions with society. And so, but that proposal was rejected. We had a large group of highly qualified academics, scientists, professionals, and a very large group of conservation and restoration-minded folk and organizations give an excellent presentation to the Fish and Wildlife Commission, but in the end, they just maintained the status quo. A lot of it has to do with the fact that there's pushback from the Oregon Department of Agriculture. They're actually the ones who pushed through the idea and got the legislation designating beaver a predator nuisance species. And so there's big money involved in agriculture, especially timber. And so there is a lot of pushback to us, you know, keeping the beaver functioning, doing what they do best up in the headwaters of the Cascades and the Coast Range. We're fully convinced that the salmon runs will not be recovered until a much higher level of beaver ecology is restored to the system.
Well, it makes sense. We're talking about a species that, like you said, co-evolved. You're missing one of the pieces here, and we're allowing them to continue to be hunted and killed.
Yeah, and you know, like in the Tiller District, we very clearly see the H.J. Andrews Experimental Forest, Julia Jones, the Coyote Creek Experimental Forest here in the Tiller District of the Umpqua National Forest. There is a very clear climate change signature in the hydrological processes. It's well documented and peer reviewed, very well, you know, carefully. The database that they were using to get, you know, and the analysis on was like 60 years worth of data. We need these creatures back in the system. What's interesting is that the state, through the Beaver Working Group, State Beaver Working Group, did a survey of the residents of the state of Oregon, and 80% of this very intense sampling, 80% of the people didn't even need incentives to allow beaver to be restored to the landscape. So there's this disconnect between the general population and these bureaucracies and you know, the people that stand to be adversely impacted by beaver ecology. But like I say, we have solutions. We've been working on this for the better part of 20 years. We have answers to, you know, farms getting their fields flooded.
Uh-huh.
We can allow the aquifer to recharge without having to have, you know, beaver killed.
I was going to ask you, what are some of those? I've heard of these flow control devices, beaver deceivers. What is that specifically?
Basically, it's beaver. When a beaver builds a dam, they are stimulated to keep building that dam as long as they hear water flowing over the dam. So basically, what they'll do is they'll take a, you know, say 18-inch diameter poly pipe, run it through the beaver dam further back into the beaver pond, put a cage around the inlet part so water can flow out, hence no water flowing over the dam. So the beaver are satisfied with the level of water that's in the pond versus continually building and continually flooding. It's really cool. If you can look at it online, beaver deceivers or flow control devices. And we're still working out some bugs. You know, the Fish and Wildlife Service and National Marine Fisheries Service is concerned about fish migrations. And of course, there's always bureaucratic nuances associated with policies to address that are not really relevant to ecosystem function. It's just,
yeah.
If you have a man-made structure put in the stream, you must allow for a fish ladder or something like that. Some crazy.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that doesn't make sense because the fish and the beavers have co-evolved. I've heard that juvenile salmonids can, you know, swim through a beaver dam, and fish can jump these smaller dams. It's not like a giant culvert or a actual human-made dam. It's completely
exactly.
Yeah,
we've had beaver conferences over the course of the last 15 years, and one of the bumper stickers that we made for the conference was beaver taught salmon to jump. They're really a critically important species, and we need a grassroots impetus to, you know, shed light on what's going on in the bureaucracies, and a grassroots impetus to change the paradigm.
So how do folks get involved with this specific effort that y'all are working on? What are your next steps? How can people contribute or help in this effort?
Well, first and foremost, I highly recommend some of the really big impetus behind the effort is associated with conservation NGOs, Native Fish Society, Umpqua Watersheds, Oregon Wild, conservation anglers, guide associations, everybody, you know, it depends on your niche in society and what you're comfortable with, but a lot of the NGOs are real savvy with this. There are legal institutions, Lewis and Clark School of Law, Oregon Western Law, all these organizations are involved. And right now, we just went through this process of the commission rejecting our offer, our petition. It wasn't a petition. It was just a request.
Okay.
Please stop trapping and hunting beaver in the headwaters, mostly on federal public lands. And so right now we're reconnoitering and don't have our next step fully developed, but it looks like it's going to be in the form of a petition, a formal petition to the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission. And I would be glad to let you know when that thing has wings.
That's awesome. Yeah, well, we'd be happy to share the word and get that out there to folks.
There's a couple of key organizations. Of course, Umpqua Watersheds, our restoration committee, is real big on this. You can contact me at stanley@umpquawatersheds.org, all one word, lowercase. There is a group called the beavercoalition.org, all one word. That's newly formed, and they will be moving forward in their way. And, of course, we are going to continue to solicit help from the academic community, et cetera.
What do the tribes in Oregon, what is their role in this this effort?
It's a mixed bag, but by and large, they are the tribes as sovereign nations and the tribes that are not sovereign
yep.
nations have long valued beaver. They lived with it. They saw what it was like to have them, and of course they know now what it's like not to. So we have a lot of support from the Native American tribes. Not all of them are locked in, but a good portion are.
It's important to be respectful and engaging with tribes. They've, you know, the history of violence and oppression, genocide is huge, and the, you know, loss of land base, the amount of issues to be addressed in the current, you know, interest in traditional ecology and practices. It's just, it's there's a
yeah.
lot being asked of tribal nations, and it's really important for us to be respectful. And
I agree 100%. In fact, before we even got involved in moving this forward,
yeah.
We approached the tribes and let them know what we were doing and solicited their help. Yeah, we're all about that. That's critical component to, from our perspective.
Awesome.
You know, we feel like the traditional ecological knowledge was a treasure trove of insight into the natural world for this area.
Yeah.
And we've lost so much. Knowledge and sensitivity to the ecosystems, the abundance of life, the richness of the Pacific Northwest was absolutely took place with human beings as a key component of the whole thing.
Coevolution, just like with the salmon and the beaver.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. And all of a sudden, I mean, it's no small thing that the decimation of the tribes, their culture, and the ecosystem are one big problem.
Yeah.
They're not separate.
So we keep working on dealing with all these issues together as we move forward. And I want to thank you, Stan, for taking the time to give this really awesome information on beavers and Oregon and the great work that you and everyone who's involved in this are doing. And we'll keep our ear to the ground on this and supporting y'all. And yeah, I just want to say thanks for this insightful conversation.
Well, thank you, Andrew. I really appreciate the Coast Range Association's effort to reach out to the public and inform. Grateful for the opportunity to speak with you.
We'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time.
This is Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole Variety Hour, your source.